And now joining me in the KRVS studios to celebrate spring theatrically are Elsa Demetriadis, who is one of the co-founders of Wanderlust Theater, and Stephen Cooper and Duncan Thistlewaite, here to talk about 12 Angry Men. And I asked Elsa if I was going to get a taste of the anger in here when you all came in.
I am furious.
You are angry. And you're not going to take it anymore. Well, before we start talking about your roles, I would like Elsa to address just how seminal a play this is. Many of our listeners may not have heard of it before, although I was reading a fascinating statistic about how often this film, the film version, is shown in secondary schools.
Right.
It's really something that has inspired a lot of people and been very, very much a part of the cultural life of the United States.
Absolutely.
Ever since it came out.
Well, Reginald Rose was supposed to come up with a new idea for a teleplay, and he was kind of running dry. And he was asked to serve on a jury, and he thought, wow, this would make a great teleplay. So it was originally a movie for television, and then it became a movie, and then he wrote a play based on the movie. So there's actually three versions, but yes, you know, students are asked to read one version of the script or another, and lots of community theaters do it. It was just remounted in New York, and we're really excited to be able to do it.
Well, what is it about this play? Because I'm sure people are thinking, oh, courtroom dramas.
Right.
They're, you know, dime a dozen, Perry Mason. There's all kinds of courtroom drama out there. What is unique about this play?
Well, I think for me, it's less about it being a courtroom drama and more about what happens when you put, you know, 12 people of varying backgrounds in a room and allow them to reveal their true feelings about issues, you know, mm-hmm. and how they are going to interact with one another when they have no background relationships. And, you know, we are doing it in true to period, you know, set in 57. And that's not as often produced because, you know, it's difficult to find 12 men and stick with it. You know, often you have like 12 angry jurors or 12 angry women or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. But I think that with, you know, the number of cases, you know, from OJ to Jodi Arias to Casey Anthony and you know, eventually the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case, it's really fascinating to kind of get an insight as to what's going on what could be going on in one of the jury rooms.
Right, know? Because it isn't a courtroom drama. It's behind the scenes,
right.
Things that we don't usually see.
Sure. Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, another thing I read was that one of the effects the play had was on Sonia Sotomayor. It's what decided her career in law. It helped her to decide to go to law school.
Fabulous.
After
wow.
She had seen the play or the film, one of them. But she has also very often instructed her juries to do the exact opposite.
Probably smart of her.
Don't act like these guys.
That's right. First of all, don't be angry. and maybe you've read this too, but the Japanese version is called 12 Gentle Japanese.
No.
Hmm. Yes. And how that got translated that way, I'm not sure. But that was, let's see, who was? Oh, Koki Mitani.
Oh, wow.
Did the film 12 Gentle Japanese. So maybe they play it differently. So 12 Angry Men played to period. And I guess that means you got to choose guys who look really handsome in 1956.
Oh, absolutely. That was the first criteria, really.
Or had been born before in some cases.
That's right.
Or she ran out of those and picked me.
Well, now, one of the characteristics of this play is that you're not named, are you? You're
numbers.
You have a number.
And number three.
You're okay. You're number three. And Stephen?
Number seven.
You're number seven.
Baseball.
Okay. So you're okay. And I've been reading up on this. You're the irritated juror, aren't you?
Yes, I am. It's really kind of a, from an acting point of view, it's a really interesting play in the fact that we are there on stage the entire time. And it's really, you know, it's not in a lot of plays you have dialogue that's like, but there's a lot of just listening and taking it in. And I've been finding that, yes, there are sections of the play that I really get irritated by people. And because Yeah, well, I don't want to give too much away, but I have impending business that means I need to get out of this place quick.
All right.
And the longer they take, the more frustrated I become.
Well, let's describe these 12 people. I mean, aside from being angry, okay, you're number three mm-hmm. and you're number seven. And I don't know if we're going to give away exactly the part that number three plays. You're a very crucial part in that jury, aren't you?
I am.
All right. Well, what was your first reaction when you either read or saw this play?
Well, I remember Duncan. The movie, the Henry Fonda movie that everybody, I'm sure, you know, remembers. And hearing that I was going to be number three I was like, oh, okay, I'll have to stretch here and reach there, and it was a challenge. It was mm-hmm. I saw the script as a challenge, mm-hmm. and
would
it
you,
is.
Would you have rather been number eight?
No.
No. Okay.
No. He's got a great part, mm-hmm. and I think he's perfectly cast.
All right. And again, for those people who don't know all these people, we'll probably have to stop throwing around all the numbers. it's not a Sudoku puzzle. But so you have these 12 people. Describe some of the different personalities. You've described a little. What is your character like, Duncan?
He's abrasive and he's aggressive. And he's got a really intense backstory that he brings into the room with him that influences the way he behaves and how he thinks about the case. So that's kind of his thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, he's hitting those notes.
And Stephen?
Oh, well, number seven, a lot of times I feel like I'm like in The Muppets, the two old guys that sit up in the balcony and really don't participate in anything worthwhile.
Waldorf and Statler.
Yes, thank you.
No problem.
I just feel like I'm throwing things across the room and like seeing what will land.
Was that your methodology of getting into the thinking about those two
It's just
Muppets?
Like honestly on the first read of it, that's what I thought of was just these guys that sit there that don't really bring much to the table substantially. He's very much a joker. I will say that about him. He gets frustrated.
So a joker,
when it's
not
fun.
He's not in a good humored way. He's not a joker in a good humored way.
Well, no, he can be. He just when it stops being fun, he wants nothing to do with it.
Right.
Is kind of where I've you know, it was a discussion that we had, and I kind of agree with on the character. He's a good time guy, and when it stops being fun, he has an edge to him.
Well, just hearing about those two characters, I'm sure people, again, if they have not seen the movie, can start to begin to understand why this is perfect for a drama, just the different characters that can appear in a room mm-hmm. like this. And maybe we didn't mention before, what is the situation here, Elsa? Describe what they're deliberating.
Okay, it's 1957, and it's an all-white male jury, and they've been tasked with deciding the guilt or innocence of a young minority boy who may or may not have stabbed his father. And so it's their process of either coming up with a not guilty or guilty verdict. And that's kind of what it is, you know. Mm-hmm. And some people initially vote guilty and then ultimately vote not guilty and vice versa. And there's a lot of waffling and you know.
I think that's one of the interesting things about it, all the shifting allegiances and the way the votes go around the room and change. And Stephen's one of my strong allies in the play, and then he's not.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
and that's one of the fascinating
things. Well, it's been kind of fascinating of trying to figure out, you know, because like the moment before is we just sat in court for 3 days listening to all of this be presented. So like part of the process of this is really in our own minds trying to figure out not only exactly what was said in the courtroom, but, you know, as the people deliberate and discover new things or have new observations of what really actually happened.
So,
and can we even know that?
But that part is not in the play. The courtroom is not in the play. It's
no,
just what you all bring to
well,
this.
I'm just the moment before.
Yes.
Like
mm-hmm.
the moment before we step on stage is like, okay, leave the courtroom, go to the jury room.
Right. So as actors, you have to bring all of that into this moment.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And not only are shifting allegiances going on in this room, in this setting here. But you all, I think there are things happening in the audience as well. I mean, it seems to me everything I've heard about this play, the film, that's very much a part of it is the audience reaction. And it is probably in any play. But did you find yourself very aware of trying to heighten tension in your audience also, Duncan?
Well, we haven't really had an audience yet, so.
Well, that's, yes.
So we don't know
but
what's.
But you must be thinking of them.
We are thinking about mm-hmm. it. And
we try to do that for Elsa every night.
Elsa is the audience, right?
She's changed her mind several times.
Well, that's the really interesting thing is you really don't know. And mm-hmm. you know, there's sections of the play that you find yourself really agreeing with what people are saying. Mm-hmm. And then there's other times that you're like, wait, that just doesn't ring true for me. Mm-hmm. You know,
I think that's going to be interesting to see where they find the humor and where they go,
right?
You know, and mm-hmm. what their reaction is going to be. I'm really looking forward to that.
All right. Well, let's talk about how it felt to be. Now, I'm imagining a room with sort of a huge conference table in it,
right.
But you're
That's
on
it.
A set. Are you actually around a table?
Yes, we are.
So are some of you, your backs are to the audience, or how does that –
It's lengthwise. Mm-hmm. So you see to the left profile and to the right profile, and the person that's at the foot swings his chair around.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to sit at the table with those guys.
Right. It's Stephen. Stephen's the troublemaker initially.
We're getting that picture. We are. Now, you said something interesting. I think it was you, Stephen, about reacting. You know, this is not a traditional blocking. You're not walking around. Are you seated for most of the play?
There's some blocking. We get up and talk and go to the water fountain, and there's a restroom. And so, you know, there are coat hooks and there are things to go do and places to be.
Yeah, I mean,
but mostly it's table-centered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I mean, like there is like blocking as you would a traditional play. The thing that has made this a very different process that's been really kind of fun is that a good 70% of the play, like we're all on stage, but we're listening. It's like less of – I mean there are the moments where you affect and all that, but a lot of it is really being in the moment and really listening and finding what's true and real in the moment to your character as you try to process through and figure out where you stand and where the allegiances fall. It's been really fascinating on that level of – you know, you go through the process of reading the script before rehearsal, but – now in rehearsal, like really discovering it through the process of listening to these different people and reacting to that and kind of following how that affects you in the moment. It's been kind of fascinating. Like as a character actor, I've had a ball playing with this one. It's been a lot of fun.
How do you impart listening to your audience? How do you emanate what Stephen's describing
you
in
just
his
do
own
it.
I think
head.
I think the act of listening is a very active thing, even though you're physically immobile. So it's this, and it's mm-hmm. I mean, people can sense attention and where it's being directed, and I think that's part of the hopefully for them, for the audience, has to be part of the enjoyment is watching those focuses change and switch. And
right. And Elsa, as a director, has that been a large part of what you've been doing, is maybe instructing them on how to listen?
I think mostly it's just to remind them that they need to be reacting honestly and not trying to recreate what they were talking about a little bit last night, not recreate what they think they felt then when they rehearsed it two nights ago, but actually come to that moment honestly and fresh each time, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's been a blast. It really has.
Mm-hmm. And particularly for you, Stephen, I know, and many of our listeners who have heard you before during interviews know that you're a certified weapons and battle instructor.
Yeah, fight choreographer,
instructor.
Stage combatant.
So your training is all about action. And, you know, if you're angry, well, you pull out a sword, huh?
There's a little of that.
There's some of that.
Well, acting is about doing. But, you know, listening is a very active thing. Just being in the moment and being present. It can be very active if you engage yourself and kind of let go of anything preconceived and just allow the moment to be there now.
Yeah. Now, how do you all deal with, and I guess this is a question also about how the play is written. You're doing it in period. It's in the 50s. As Elsa mentioned, it's an all-white male jury, you know, which makes us think, jury of your peers is a young man from the slums of a big city. Did you find what you were having to do very period, or did it feel much more contemporary, universal? What part of what you were doing felt dated, and what felt?
I think it felt both. I think there's some of the language is dated. And but the situations are universal, and this, mm-hmm. this is going on today. And you know, these issues haven't gone away, and in some places they've intensified, and so it's both. Mm-hmm. It's a period piece, but the issues are universal.
So we won't come away thinking, oh, that happened in 1957.
Mm, absolutely not.
Still
again.
Pretty fresh. I mean, mm-hmm. we've come a long way as a society, but, you know, behind closed doors, whenever the masks are pulled off, like a lot of the same things that would have been an issue with, you know, a jury of their peers with 12 white men and a minority and the things that are spoken of. It's sad but true, but in this day and age, like we've come a long way, but we still have a long way to go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And did you find, in addition to listening, I guess I'm thinking of this as a very interesting dynamic where you know the outcome, but you're trying to create this intense atmosphere of convincing others, that you're constantly trying to swing somebody else over to your side. Did you find that an interesting part of this play? I mean, did
very
it stretch you as an actor?
And the whole notion about facts and statistics and facts and what they mean and how they can be bent, which is another universal thing in which you see a lot today in the political process. You can use statistics and facts for anything. You can come at it from any different way, and the play has a lot of that in that. What mm-hmm. is the truth? And then the truth in a lot of cases is based on where you're coming at it from, mm-hmm. so to speak. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that.
Well, and finding, I guess, too, that it's not just the facts. I mean, there seems to be a lot of emotional attempts at persuasion as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of different means that people go about making their point. And it's really been kind of fascinating. I mean, you know, like we speak of like allegiances, and like it's just been in like the last few weeks that I've really like started to find like a kindred spirit with number three. Like there is, you know what I mean? It's kind of like in finding other people, and then like the ones that like, I don't know, then there's some jurors in the room that they put me off at the beginning that I don't even want to hear what they have to say after that. But that's just coming from the perspective of juror number seven. The different characters have different ways. I mean, like, they're 12 different individuals. Like, I've just found, like, in the moment with my character, I make a handful of legitimate arguments in the play.
Some not.
And, you know, and it's definitely the desire to affect the other mm-hmm. has to be a part of it. Otherwise, you're just up there reciting lines, and that doesn't really do anything for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's kind of interesting what Elsa was saying about she's instructing you all to be very honest in, mm-hmm. in your reactions and your actions in the play. But it, to me, just knowing a little bit, as I do, of the two of you, it doesn't sound like your characters are yourself, you know, that their reactions are not the way that you might react.
I wouldn't, but that's the fun part about it. That's
the
joy of acting is to to portray all the stuff that you're not, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, and I mean, like, you know, and people always say that it's portraying stuff that you're not, but like I truly believe in the infinite potential that, like, you know, that I could be or do or say anything at this moment, but because of the way that I came up and who I am, I have this small portion of humanity that I play within. But within, I have the potential to access any of that. That, like, as an actor, it's really about just, like, figuring out who your character is and being honest to the character rather than yourself. That may mean you access sides of yourself that you normally wouldn't go to. Which it has been really nice with this process that I've had like a run of playing the heavy on stage that for the first time in a while, I'm not the biggest jerk on stage. And that's kind of fun. You know?
It's true.
Elsa took pity on you during this play. I want to tell those people just tuning in, my guests are Duncan Thistlewaite, Stephen Cooper, and Elsa Dimitriadis. Elsa is directing 12 Angry Men by Reginald Rose. It is the play adaptation of the film, mm-hmm. The 1954 and then 57 film, very seminal films. In fact, I think that film has been chosen to be in like the top 100 most influential films ever and is stored away in like the National Film Registry. So an amazing script. And where can people see this? performances and how many
Theater 810. Mm-hmm. We're running Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of this weekend, and Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of the second weekend. June 2nd, though, following the matinee this Sunday, we will have a talkback session. And we have Barbara Connor, who's an attorney and adjunct professor of philosophy here at UL, Dr. John Fierro, who is an emeritus professor of English, as well as one of the cast members, and Sherry T. Broussard, who's a community activist as well as an author. And they'll be discussing race, juries, and how they've been reflected in literature.
All right. Plus, you'll have the 12 angry men
absolutely
there.
Absolutely. Right
there
in front.
Their part. And, and by that time, everyone will know what the verdict was.
That's right.
They'll have discovered it. Do you all have a Facebook presence, webpage?
Absolutely. WanderlessTheater.com. There's a Facebook page, and you can call Theater 810 at 484-0172 or WanderlessTwelveAngryMen.eventbrite.com for tickets.
And there you can find a list of all the other characters. With me, Duncan Thistlewaite, is juror number three.
Juror number three, and
Stephen Cooper is juror number seven. Yeah. Find out more about their personalities this weekend.
Absolutely.
At Theater 810. Call ahead for reservations.
I would this
Seating
time
is
for
limited,
sure.
Definitely. Well, thank you all, and we look forward to it. And if you have any budding people, young lawyers out there, remember Sonia Sotomayor made her decision based on this play. Thank you all.
Thank you,
Judith.